Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 8th day of January, now 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call. And let's talk about a week where, if there really is a theme, it has to do with evil, which simply can't stay hidden any longer. And we're going to start off with a story that really makes that case. This comes from actuarial data, according to the CEO of Indianapolis-based insurance company One America, who says the death rate for those aged 18 through 64 has risen, are you sitting down, folks, an astonishing 40% over pre-pandemic levels. Quote, we're seeing right now the highest death rates we've ever seen in the history of this business, not just at One America, said Scott Davidson, head of the $100 billion insurance company that's been in operation since 1877 and has about 2,400 employees. The increase represents, quote, huge, huge numbers, primarily among working age people. You have to qualify it that way now, because who wants to work when Big Brother is giving you freebies and inviting people to come in and share the lucre too? But these deaths are from those who have employer-sponsored group life plans through One America, according to the Center Square. Quote, and what we saw just in the third quarter, we're seeing it continue into the fourth quarter. And that is that death rates are up 40% over what they were pre-pandemic, said Davison in an online news conference last week. Just to give you an idea of how bad that is, a three sigma or one in 200 year catastrophe would be a mere 10% increase over pre-pandemic numbers. So 40% is just unheard of. It's way out there on the it doesn't happen by accident sigma scale, folks. And Davidson said, the majority of deaths being filed are not being classified as due to booga, 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 COVID-19. And what do you bet they're not being attributed to the COVID-19 poison pokes either? The CEO did put it this way, however. What the data is showing to us is that the deaths that are being reported as COVID deaths greatly understate the actual death losses among working age people from the pandemic. It may not be all COVID-19 on their death certificate, but deaths are up just huge, huge numbers, he said, adding the company has seen an uptick in disability claims too, first at the short-term level, now the long-term. And as one commentator put it, it's really hard to hide three sigma events from actuaries by shoveling the bullshit waste stream media propaganda. And as CEO Scott Davidson explained, we're seeing right now the highest death rates we have seen in the history of this business. Remember, they're almost a century and a half old. And it's not just at One America, he said. The data is consistent across every player in that business. For One America, said their CEO, we expect the costs of this are going to be well over $100 million, and this is our smallest business. So it's having a huge impact on that, he said, adding the costs will be passed on to employers purchasing group life insurance policies. Interesting, folks. No mention in here of whether they'll offer a discount to employers that don't force their employees to kill themselves with the Zyklon B injection. No, I didn't expect it. You don't either, that they'll come right out and tell you the truth. But at that same news conference where Davidson spoke, Brian Tabor, president of the Indiana Hospital Association, said this. Hospitals across the state are being flooded with patients, quote, with many different conditions, adding, unfortunately, the average Hoosier's health has declined during the pandemic.
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
Oh, yeah, and we're not done yet. Would you believe this? Dr. Lindsay Weaver, Indiana's chief medical officer, said that hospitalizations in Indiana are now higher than before the COVID-19 Zyklon B injection was introduced a year ago. Oh, and in fact, it's higher now than at any point over the last 5 years.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Well, folks, the truth is coming out in all of its deadly fury, whether the waste stream wants to talk about it or not. This next one, yeah, and it's related, really resonates with me as a pilot. And I've talked about this true nastiness before, but I saw some more information this week that I think really helps us to understand not just what's going on, but the mentality, too. Okay, this is about a particular pilot, American pilot Greg Pearson, who is among those who has now come and decided he's better speak out. Speaking out about a wave of post-injection illnesses that he's seeing among his colleagues in commercial air operations that he says is spreading rapidly throughout the aviation industry. A recent interview he did with Real America's Voice, he revealed that many of his pilot colleagues are, quote, dropping like flies. This is anecdotal, right? But he sees a lot of them with what he describes as severe chest pains. Pericarditis, myocarditis, stroke pokes, all of those things are associated, as we know, with, well, the Zyklon B. He said he himself actually had to be rushed to the hospital shortly after he took his so-called vaccination. Remember, they are mandating pilots take this poison poke. And what I railed about a couple weeks back was the FAA actually has a federal aviation regulation that says if you take an experimental injection, you are not fit to fly. And there is a do not fly, do not renew. In other words, don't pass off on a medical exam. Prohibition in place. Well, at least in the regs. The aviation medical examiners are told you can't sign somebody like that off. Well, they just basically said, oh, if we followed our own regs, we will take the entire commercial air pilot fleet out because they're not fit to fly. They shouldn't be in a cockpit. But wait, there's more. So now they're dropping like flies. He, in fact, was rushed to the hospital after he was mandated and then took the poison poke. Caused him to develop serious heart problems. Quote, I went to the ER where they quickly hooked me up to an EKG, IVs, did blood work, determined that I was in atrial fibrillation. It's a major cause of stroke. I could have stroked out, he said, at 100 feet above ground. And then, in a paroxysm of muscle spasm, just smashed the plane into the ground. And there had been nothing anybody could have done about it. I could have pushed down on that stick before anybody next to me could do anything. Then it's all over for a lot of people. We're seeing it in cars. We haven't yet seen it in airplanes, and part of the reason is because there's two pilots. So when one strokes out in flight or they make an emergency landing, we have reported those stories. But here's the other thing, David. This is the part that, as a pilot, is fascinating to me. He said it this way. Now think about it and understand the psychology here. There are a number of pilots out there, said Pearson, who are fearful to come forward and speak out. They're fearful of retribution. They'll lose their jobs. They're fearful of telling people the truth. You are at risk every time you're stupid enough to get on a commercial airplane where the pilots are not fit to fly. These are guys, he said, that are going to work with crushing pains in their chest and in their hearts. They're scared to death that they're going to lose their careers, unquote. Now, he's right, but let me tell you, I've been flying for over 30 years, and I have known hundreds of pilots in my flying career, flown with dozens, if not hundreds, of different people. Talked with many folks who have gotten to be 60, 70, 80 years old over the course of that time. A lot of folks that I knew, like Bob Hoover, who got to be 80 and was still one of the best pilots on planet Earth. But on the other hand, I know that one of the things that scares the living heck out of pilots is the idea that they go in, they take their annual medical exam or biannual medical exam, depending upon whether they're flying commercially or not. It's actually more for some commercial operations, more often. And they're going to be told, oh, you have a heart murmur. You have some myocarditis. You got some inflammation here. We're not going to sign off on your medical, and you're not going to be able to fly. Now, for those that are commercial pilots, that means I'm going to lose my job, my livelihood. For those that are private pilots, like I was, I knew a fellow who basically said, I would rather die than have my medical revoked and not be able to fly again in my lifetime. So that scared him worse than the heart attack itself. And that's the point. And he's not alone. I've known a number of pilots who were so scared that they might lose their medical and not be able to fly because that's what, you know, that's one of the things that makes life wonderful. I can relate to that. So here they are finding, I have taken the poison poke. I have chest pains. I'm worried I might stroke out in flight. But if I speak up, I'll never fly again. What am I going to do? And the answer for far too many is, I'm scared to death. I was scared, and that's why I took the damn poison poke. Now I'm scared I'm going to lose something even worse. My life, my livelihood, my ability to fly, and my family as a result. I'm going to shut up. And that is a damnably evil thing that's being done to people, and the flying public is the one that's going to suffer as a result. It's not only a violation of trust, it's downright evil. I really can't summarize the events of this week without noting the significance of one of the most important podcasts and interviews, literally, in years, thanks to Joe Rogan, who had Dr. Robert Malone on, talking about things that both of them have talked about before, but really, it was a masterful job, and as at least one commentator put it, the Waystream Media is now finding itself losing the fight of its life, all thanks to Joe Rogan and the truth that's coming out, whether they like it or not. And we're not quite there yet, your host suggests, but I hope he's right, and we're certainly moving in the right direction. But having seen what we've all seen now for several years running, I tend to think they're going to double down again. Anyway, says the author, I think the result of this seismic shift is going to be several-fold, but the most important revelation I've come to is that the mainstream media is losing the fight of its life over the COVID narrative. And on that score, folks, I have to agree. They are losing the fight. They're losing the fight of their lives. But the result, along with the medical profession, and especially their puppet masters in the Federal Death Agency and Central Death Control bureaucracies, and yeah, let's go Brandon too, is that they have lost all credibility. That doesn't mean any more than Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or CNN is likely to, that they'll ever admit they've been lying. And yeah, we stole the election and lied about that so-called insurrection too. Although I guess it's conceivable, I can imagine them saying, oh yeah, what are you going to do about it now that we've all convinced you to take the poison poke and you're going to be dead in less than 2 years? Hardy har. And if you follow the logic of that one through, folks, and ask, well, if they do admit that and people realize they've got nothing else to lose, yeah, where does that lead? I suspect that's probably a good reason they won't ever admit that level of lie. So here's a clip from that interview where Dr. Robert Malone basically just lays it right out there.
Our government is out of control on this, and they are lawless. They completely disregard bioethics. They completely disregard the federal common rule. They have broken all the rules that I know of, that I've been trained on for years and years and years. These mandates of an experimental vaccine are explicitly illegal. They are explicitly inconsistent with the Nuremberg Code. They're explicitly inconsistent with the Belmont Report. They are flat out illegal and they don't care. And the only thing standing between us, and it's too late for many of our colleagues, including my, you know, the unfortunate colleagues in the DOD, hopefully we're going to be able to stop them before they take our kids.
Well, I guess I agree. Hopefully we'll stop them before they take all the kids, but no doubt about it, folks, they've already injected and perhaps destroyed thousands, if not millions. And they intend to kill more, unless people realize what's going on before it's too late. Well, that was no doubt a bit different. I'll tell you what it was in just a second, if you haven't already guessed. But it's about setting up for some good news, at least if you look at it in the right way. Because especially in this case, it really makes more sense if you hear some of the bad news first. And as I was thinking about that, I realized, oh, wait a minute, there's some really ugly news we ought to start off with. So yeah, that was the ugly, the bad, and the good. In other words, the theme song from that famous Clint Eastwood spaghetti western, Backwards. So without further ado, here is the ugly news for today. We actually got a couple of stories on this front. Let's go with the French communist dictator first, before we get to America's marionette Führer. Evil tyrant Emmanuel Macron unleashed a tirade against the unvaccinated today, the French Untermenschen. He literally vowed to, quote, piss them off until they submit to his demands to commit Harry Caray. And he told one of the nation's leading newspapers that he no longer considers those less than humans to be French citizens. Let's read the translated version from Le Parisien, courtesy of Zero Hedge. I am not about pissing off the French people, he told readers of that rag, but as to the non-vaccinated, I really want to piss them off, and we will continue to do this to the end. This is the strategy. He left out the part about mass murder, but you get the picture. And that really is ugly. Working hard to keep up, but not quite succeeding, after all he's senile, so cut him some slack, is the American imposter. Speaking from the fake White House set with the fake background, the fake president instructed parents not to let their children, that's a slip, I think, play with unvaccinated kids. Eventually, of course, we intend to poison them all. But for now, since we can't get to those under five.
And for parents with kids too young to be vaccinated, surround your kids with people who are vaccinated.
That way they can get their dose of spike proteins secondhand. I wonder if this means the Biden Führer is now going to quit sniffing the hair and fondling little unvaccinated boys and girls. And right there alone, folks, is one more perfectly good reason not to inject him with that Zyklon B poke. But yeah, any way you slice it, it's more ugly. And as we move on from there to the truly bad, I'll point out that at least it's a transition to the good that's coming. From Paul Joseph Watson via Summit News, Dr. Robert Malone, we've talked about that earlier this week, with an absolutely groundbreaking interview that he did with Joe Rogan, and his assertions about mass formation psychosis in the context of the COVID-1984 pandemic are underscored, writes Watson, by the fact that authorities in the UK have admitted to using, quote, totalitarian methods of, yeah, they say it, mind control in order to instill fear in the population. Meanwhile, in totalitarian communist Canada, the military has also admitted they've launched a psychological operations campaign against their own people in order to manipulate them into compliance with the COVID-1984 restrictions and mandates. And during his viral podcast with Joe Rogan, after he was banned by Twitter, Dr. Malone explained how the global population was being manipulated into remaining in a constant state of literally hysterical anxiety and fear via what was called mass formation psychosis. Quote, what the heck happened to Germany in the 20s and 30s, he asked. Very intelligent, highly educated population, and they went barking mad. And how did that happen? The answer is mass formation psychosis. When you have a society that's become decoupled from each other and has free-floating anxiety in a sense that things don't make sense, we can't understand it, and then their attention gets focused by a leader or a series of events on one small point, just like hypnosis, they literally become hypnotized and can be led anywhere, unquote. Continues Paul Joseph Watson, Malone's summary has now been backed up by leaked details of how the UK government manipulated its population during the early days of the pandemic. First revealed by author and journalist Laura Dodsworth, scientists in the UK working as advisors for the totalitarian government admitted what they now concede to be, quote, unethical and totalitarian methods of instilling fear in the population in order to control behavior during the pandemic. The various quotes were reported back in March 2020 by the London Telegraph. One of the unnamed members of what was called the Subcommittee for the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, or SAGE, called the Scientific Pandemic Influenza Group on Behavior, or SPIB, said that in March of 2020, quote, the government was very worried about compliance and they thought people wouldn't want to be locked down. Another even outright called it mind control, but said they tried to go about it in a positive way, even though it's been used nefariously in the past. There were discussions about fear being needed to encourage compliance, and decisions were made about how to ramp up the fear. Whereupon he added that, quote, the way we have used fear is dystopian, even admitting that it was, quote, ethically questionable. But he continued, like a weird science experiment, ultimately it backfired because people became too scared, unquote. In communist Canada, the Ottawa Citizen reported that, quote, Canadian military leaders saw the pandemic, they spelled it wrong, as a unique opportunity to test out propaganda techniques on an unsuspecting public. And meanwhile, as Watson concludes, after early efforts that didn't quite succeed to bury the term altogether, Google is now desperately trying to rig its search results to return only negative articles about mass formation psychosis and especially Dr. Malone. Couple of other quick stories in the bad news category, totally predictable, however. First, from Christina Layla in the Gateway Pundit, yet another hospital is having problems as a result of getting rid of all of the good people who know better than to take the Zyklon B injection. A Florida hospital has now closed their maternity unit due to, say it with me folks, staffing shortages after they fired all kinds of the new N-word, unvaxxed healthcare workers. This is called Holy Cross Health Sick in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, that was forced to close their maternity unit until further notice due to, yeah, the obvious. Right after they imposed a vaccine mandate for all 2,500 of their, well, at least then, current employees. The ultimatum date was September the 21st, and what we're seeing now is what engineers call lag. It takes a while until the effects of such stupidity play out in ways that even the stupid begin to realize, uh-oh, something's wrong. Same source, this time Jim Hoff, same stupidity, and the same result, but with a twist, also not unexpected. Michigan's largest healthcare system, the Henry Ford Health System, SICK, has now reported that after a massive vaccination mandate with a compliance rate of 99%, has now had 686 of its employees test positive for, say it with me, booga, 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 COVID-19 over the last 7 days. And that said, one of their so-called doctors on Henry Ford's website is a threefold increase since just December, and they've had to close 97 beds in three of their four hospitals, mostly due to staffing challenges.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Mrs. Blue.
I guess.
And with that, folks, we are finally ready for the good. But I guess I want to introduce this story with a bit more of the bad, because if you've noticed, and I saw a number of articles over the last, 6 months or so, about various dating websites in the United States, Match, and I'm sure there are others, that are very proud and allow people to boast when they have had the Zyklon B injection. Yes, I've had the jab. Aren't I socially superior to you? Don't you want to date me? That kind of thing. Obviously, your host always thought that was more than a bit backwards, like people posting pictures of themselves wearing a mask. Not only can't you see their face, but arguably you can get a hint at their IQ, and certainly how susceptible they are to propaganda. But in any case, it looks like maybe the worm is turning. Here's an anecdotal piece, admittedly, from a site called thecovidworld.com. That begins thusly. Everyone was once told that those who did not get the jab would regret it, but now it seems that the opposite is true. How's that for a duh effect, folks? In a startling reversal, they say, women who have had the COVID not vaccine are being shunned in the dating scene by potential partners due to issues with possible birth defects and infertility. Women in New York in particular have started lying about their vaccination status, it continues, because of widespread perception among men that they're infertile, probably because that's correct, or might bear children with birth defects. One man, who wants to remain anonymous, put it this way. In clubs, they claim they're not vaxxed. They say things like, oh, COVID is bullshit, or I don't want to try this new experimental shot. However, after going out with him several times, the women finally admit, yep, they took the poke, and watch as the best potential husbands leave them. Almost on the spot. That person then went on to say that at least two separate women had asked him why he would break off relations with him over something like the poison poke, and he told him, I don't want defective children. And he added, I won't get closer to a girl who lied to my face from the start. Yeah, the story continues. Not only do we have 80% plus stillbirths and similar from women who've been pregnant and taken the poison poke. No one knows yet how many who've already taken the poison poke will never bear children if they live long enough to do it anyway. But this piece adds that there are reports of women who've been vaccinated experiencing birth defects, and they're skyrocketing around the world. An early theory raised by respected doctors, it continues, was that the mRNA not vaccine would interfere with a protein called syntectin 1, crucial in pregnancy. We certainly know that these effects are most pronounced in the organs that have the highest growth rates, i.e. the ovaries and feminine organs in women and the testes in men. Unfortunately, it says, many women who allegedly trusted the science, or arguably trusted the lying genocidal psychopaths, are now reaping the consequences of their actions by virtue of having believed lying government propaganda and silencing dissenting voices. Furthermore, continues the COVID world, the kind of propaganda that was being pushed at the time shows something called full fact. Yeah, sure, publishing a fact check which categorically denied that any vaccines could possibly cause any problems with pregnancy, even though there had been no long-term studies done on the question. Well, folks, if there had been, now we know why they would have lied about it anyway. And maybe that's why they're not going to tell us for another 70 years or so. If you can stomach it, and I can get through it, here's an example of one of the whoppers in this so-called fact check. Quote, there is no scientific reason the vaccine might be expected to affect pregnancy. Full stop. And what an absolutely unconscionable, satanic lie. And no, I can't and won't finish it. This, of course, was supposed to be a good news story, remember? The good news is more and more people are waking up to it, even if in far too many cases, sadly, it's too late. At least they're still alive. And maybe they won't be inclined to take the Zyklon B boosters. It's hard not to feel sorry, though, says this piece, for such young women who went along with the lies and the mass formation psychosis. Even though they would have been entirely correct to be concerned about a rushed and untested, at best, pharmaceutical product based on new technology with no long-term studies whatsoever. Oh, yeah, and it turns out the animal studies were not made simply because all the animals that were studied, like felines and ferrets, in those so-called challenge tests, reportedly died. The good news punchline comes at the end of this story. For those pure bloods, and that term may be trending before long, the men and women who've managed to last this long and withstand the societal pressure to commit suicide and take the Zyklon B injection, there is widespread expectation that unvaccinated women and unvaccinated sperm may end up being extremely valuable. Indeed, some are now joking that it may be the next Bitcoin. Well, whether that's true or not, it's certainly an interesting step in arguably the right direction. And we'll be right back after the bottom of the hour break. Just like
And I think back on all the crap I learned in high school. It's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. This is Mark Hall, and this week was the first anniversary of January the 6th, the day that should live in infamy forever, because it was a day that the United States fell, with only a few shots being fired, and only a few actual patriots being executed by the deep state forces that have now taken over, without so much as a hint of a real response from a nation that's been destroyed by enemies both foreign and domestic, but especially by traitors from within. And they're celebrating in the swamp with a level of propaganda that would embarrass Joseph Stalin, but make Joseph Goebbels really proud. And since the waystream press is going to continue to lie their disgusting faces off about it, along with the politicos in Washington and the deep state swamp, who are so busy slapping themselves on the back for what they've gotten away with, that they may break their own arms, and then, of course, blame Trump supporters for that too, well, we'll address some of the biggest whoppers as well. And I'll not only be a lot more honest, but because we've got less than a half hour, a lot more brief to boot. Let's start right up front with a succinct summary courtesy of Mike LaChance via the Gateway Pundit, who says, if you turn on the news today, you're going to be hit with wave after wave of Democrats and the leftist media types, but we repeat ourselves, talking about January 6th and the so-called insurrection last year. Your host is going to put it this way, folks, right up front. What the swamp and press are now celebrating is the most blatant, most egregious, most serious false flag in American history. And also the most ridiculous. They killed far more people on September 11th, 2001. Only one person on November 22nd, 1963. Well, there were a couple more, all collateral damage. But in both cases, no doubt about it, they did a far better job of covering their tracks. Why, just look at how much longer it took for at least some of the truth to come out in both of those cases. And furthermore, in spite of at least one building having collapsed without actually being hit by an airplane, and a magic bullet explanation that was literally laughably bogus, both of them turned out to be less insultingly unbelievable narratives. Back to Mike LaChance, who says they'll act all so serious and sad, but it's just an act. This is like Christmas for them, and the reason they're so obsessed with it is because, as he puts it, they've got nothing else. Now, I think while that's true, folks, it's really a lot more serious than that, but we'll come back to that point, too. What are they going to run on, he asks, in the midterms? Joe Biden's booming economy? The secure southern border? His masterful withdrawal from Afghanistan? They've got nothing. Well, your host adds, they literally do have millions of walking dead, who just haven't realized it yet. Their only hope, though, says LaChance, is to convince people that Republicans and anybody who's actually read the Constitution are all domestic terrorists. And they even trotted out the disgusting excuse for an Attorney General Merrick Garland Wednesday to talk about further persecutions of anybody even remotely associated with whatever they're going to claim this was. Garland marked the one-year anniversary, said CBS News, of the January 6th insurrection with a sweeping defense of the Just Us Department's so-called investigation, hinting that the prosecutor's mission to hold organizers or anybody else that they can pin it on accountable could include charging those who weren't even physically present at the U.S. Capitol during the false flag. The actions we've taken thus far will not be our last, he said Wednesday, addressing staff members gathered together at the Just Us Department's Great Hall for the publicity stunt. The Just Us Department, he didn't pronounce it right, remains committed to holding all January 6th perpetrators and probably anybody who could even see through it at any level accountable under law or what now passes for it, whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible, and that would include thought crimes, obviously, for the assault on our, say it with me, folks, because they're going to say it over and over again, our democracy. And this serves as an interesting follow-up and setup piece, too, courtesy of Real Clear Investigations and their editors, as well as Zero Hedge, who says, maybe it's important to compare the January 6th so-called insurrection with the George Floyd and 2017 inauguration riots. Hey, remember, there actually was another insurrection, every bit as violent, back in 2017. It just didn't get anywhere close to the press. The one-year anniversary they begin of the January 6th Capitol riot arrives this week, with Americans still sharply divided. Some can tell what's going going on. Others are oblivious over the afternoon-long episode's significance and severity. With Democrats hemorrhaging support and facing the loss of Congress in spite of the election rigging come this year's midterms, and sternly presenting a mass spectacle of public events to emphasize what they claim is the threat posed to, say it with me over and over again until you're sick of it, democracy, our democracy, not yours, if you ever even had one, by Donald Trump and his party as represented that day. There is, of course, absolutely no comparable scrutiny of the nationwide summer riots in 2020 over George Floyd's murder or suicide, take your pick, protests endorsed by many, if not all, on the left amid a virulent plandemic, although polling has shown that a large majority of Americans support examining the circumstances of both events. And furthermore, Real Clear Investigations has developed a comparison database. It's pretty lengthy. I'm just going to point you to it if you're interested, allowing readers to draw their own conclusions, including the all but forgotten riots in Washington back on Inauguration Day 2017, when the election rigging didn't play out quite as successfully. Here at least are some of the highlights of that summary, worthy of note on this January 6th day that will live in infamy. The summer riots in 2020 resulted in some 15 times more injured police officers, 23 times as many actual arrests, including those who were arrested whether they were guilty or not, and estimated dollar damages up to 1,300 times more costly than the so-called Capitol riot. And note, it's beyond obvious that authorities have pursued the largely Trump-supporting Capitol rioters, sick, with substantially more vigor than the alleged, suspected, or ignored wrongdoers in the earlier two cases, while prosecutors and judges alike have weighed Capitol riot defendants' political views in adjudicating their cases, while the others, generally, if they're leftist enough, go scot-free. Hey, you know what, folks? I just had a really interesting thought. I bet if all those Capitol rioters had just gone in and stolen Nancy Pelosi's designer purse, maybe they would have gotten off scot-free like all of those in Miami, Chicago, and Los Angeles do. Oh, yeah. And as we saw in New York this week, the new leftist DA isn't even going to prosecute armed robbery. Can you smell a rat?
Let's go, Brandon. I agree.
Dozens of accused Capitol rioters have been held in pretrial detention for months where they've allegedly been mistreated. Contrast that with those who don't get held really at all. And in the summer 2020 riots, the vast majority of charges have been dismissed, as they were in the case of the 2017 inauguration riots. Protesters, though, have not dropped a single stolen election so-called Capitol riot case. So as a zero-hedge summary of the Biden-Fuhrer speech spectacle itself, as the senile one attempts to squeeze just as much political capital as he can out of the anniversary of the January 6th false flag, the White House has informed the press that Biden intends to accuse his predecessor, the actual elected president, Donald Trump, of having, quote, singular responsibility for the events of that day. And that's in spite, folks, of all the evidence of false flag pre-planning. And, as we've already talked about, commandos on scene with claimed shoot-to-kill authority as well. And this comes as the so-called Attorney General Merrick Garland, as we've already reported, insists that anyone involved will be persecuted to the full extent of what now passes for the law, and that would include thought crimes. Bloomberg even says that Biden appears to be abandoning a strategy of not mentioning Trump directly, because as his poll numbers continue to sag, the Biden regime intends a re-engagement strategy with Trump on a purely rhetorical basis to see if that might help lift his literally plummeting, I guess now we have to call it, disapproval rating. So this day represents a rhetorical opportunity for the Biden-Fuhrer to change the narrative of his flailing presidency and reorient the conversation away from his disastrous handling of, well, literally everything, towards something more politically useful for the new Bolsheviks. I tried this morning to listen to as much of the speechifying that I could stand from the usurpers masquerading as the Marionette-in-Chief and his Marie Antoinette-in-waiting, heels-in-the-air Harris. In all honesty, it was far worse even than I expected. I lost track of how many times our democracy was prattled about, Constitution be damned, after about three dozen or so. But the number of lies, gross, in your face, and how blatant are we lies, dwarfed that number in the same interval. Remember the NBC guy trying to lie about, oh, no, no, they're not shouting F you, Biden. They're saying, let's go, Brandon. Yeah, that's the ticket. And we'll get to that guy in just a minute. But notice, they didn't want him to lead off. Arguably, a big gaffe right up front might spoil the whole day. So they started off with Kamala. Gotta groom her for what's coming too, it would seem. And here the woman who effed just about everybody else to get to the White House makes that NBC sellout of a used car salesman, yeah, let's go, Brandon, look like an honest broker. I was thinking, at least briefly, up until about the 30th insulting, constitutionally illiterate reference to our democracy, and the 100th or so outright stinky, smelly whopper of just playing it straight and letting it sit there and stink and letting people see through it. If you can stand it, I couldn't, you're welcome to do that. But the point of this show is to give the audience more. And yeah, as scripture says, do not keep silent. So I'm not gonna. Let's pick it up where she talks about various false flag dates in American history. No, she doesn't come out and tell you that, of course, either. If you're old enough, do you remember where you were when those same evil forces that perpetrated January 6th took out John F. Kennedy?
Including dates that instantly remind all who have lived through them where they were and what they were doing when our democracy came under assault.
Oh, that again. I guess what she's admitting is that they killed the Constitutional Republic decades ago.
Dates that occupy not only a place on our calendars, but a place in our collective memory.
Now, of course, it's our collectivist memory.
December 7th, 1941. September 11th, 2001. And January 6th, 2021.
Now, that's interesting. Did you notice that she skipped over the assassination of an elected president? Almost certainly the most memorable historic event in any of our lifetimes. But it is interesting to note that the three that she did mention were all historically demonstrable false flags. And in every case, things that are still being lied about. I'm going to skip over her next bit of self-serving BS. I was the elected vice president, and I was at a top secret meeting because I'm so important and you're not, and so forth. And it was so horrible. I was so concerned about my staff and, of course, our democracy. Maybe she was concerned because she knew her staff wasn't important enough to rate the same kind of protection from the FBI, hostage rescue teams, DOJ commandos with shoot-to-kill orders, and other insiders that those who'd already sold out to the Chi-Coms did. Color me skeptical, folks. Let's get back to the BS here.
What the extremists who roamed these halls targeted was not only the lives of elected leaders. What they sought to degrade and destroy was not only a building, hallowed as it is. What they were assaulting were the institutions, the values, the ideals that generations of Americans have marched, picketed, and shed blood to establish and defend.
And now we have overthrown them, destroyed them, and I'm going to say it outright, folks, offensive as it is to hear it, we're now rubbing Americans' noses in it and shitting upon the values and the Constitution that our founders and far better people than these fought and died for so many years.
On January 6th, we all saw what our nation would look like if the forces who seek to dismantle our democracy are successful. The lawlessness, the violence, the chaos.
And with the exception of the obvious American government 101 illiteracy, that is far and away the closest that she came to the truth in this entire historic fabrication. Listen closely again, folks, and remember rules for radicals. What communists want to do is accuse their enemies of doing exactly what they're doing. And on this score, she read the teleprompter just right.
On January 6th, we all saw what our nation would look like if the forces who seek to dismantle our democracy are successful. The lawlessness, the violence, the chaos.
Bingo, and we've seen it ever since.
What was at stake then and now is the right to have our future decided the way the Constitution prescribes it.
By an honest election conducted in accord with the law, laid down in advance and prescribing remedies, which still haven't been followed, when outright fraud is used to subvert them, Oh, yeah, and let's not forget, explicitly limiting the powers of a tyrannical government, especially an unelected one, to terrorize its citizens. From destroying their lives and businesses, to gutting the military that was supposed to protect them from invasion from without and from within, to mandating that they be injected with poisons, to taking their children's lives as well.
We cannot let our future be decided by those bent on silencing our voices, overturning our votes, and peddling lies and misinformation.
Whoa, whoa, did she really just come right out and say that? Oh yeah, of course, that's the other team that's doing that, not us. And silencing our voices? Yeah, sure. How many times have you been banned from Twitter, Facebook, or Gulag? Madam, I got here with my heels in the air. Listen to it again.
We cannot let our future be decided by those bent on silencing our voices, overturning our votes, and peddling lies and misinformation.
Too late, we're there.
By some radical faction that may be newly resurgent, but whose roots run old and deep.
Yep, back to the 1930s in Nazi Germany. Before that, back to 1917 and the Bolshevik Revolution in Communist Russia. And way before that, all the way back to Genesis.
When I meet with young people, they often ask about the state of our democracy.
If they actually knew anything about the history of America and its government, they'd ask, why don't you know what the Constitution says? Why don't you know what form of government we were supposed to have? Why don't you know what Ben Franklin said? We were supposed to have a republic, madam, if you can keep it. Well, or if you can prevent it from being destroyed by people like this. And that's really almost enough. I honestly don't care what she tells those ignorant kids. They probably lap it up like the Kool-Aid she's dishing out here. But in context, I got to admit, this is particularly flatulent. Here we go.
You see, the strength of democracy is the rule of law. The strength of democracy is the principle that everyone should be treated equally.
Unless, of course, you're an unvaxxed peon. Unless we label you a domestic terrorist, ha ha ha, and put you in a gulag for a year. And unless you don't toe the line in every single way we say, and we'll change the rules when we feel like it, and behave like the good little slave that you are. Oh yeah, and don't you dare ask why the law doesn't apply to the likes of Hitlery, or Andrew Cuomo, who can not only grope some girls and get away with, but kill 15,000 plus old useless eaters and get away with that too.
That corruption should be given no quarter.
No, we give corruption the whole nine yards, billions of bucks, and the key to the swamp.
The strength of democracy is that it empowers the people.
Let's be clear here, though. The right kind of people. There's a big club, folks, and you ain't in it.
And the fragility of democracy is this, that if we are not vigilant, if we do not defend it...
Clearly, at least for a year now, Americans weren't, and they haven't.
That if we are not vigilant, if we do not defend it, democracy simply will not stand. It will falter and fail.
Exactly as we intended, and the founders, who called democracy the devil's own government, so clearly warned. I've certainly read this before, many times in fact. It comes from James Madison, writing as Publius in The Federalist number 10, but it very much bears repeating, especially in this context. Democracies, he said, have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Let's just come right out and say it. Horan Harris is no James Madison.
The violent assault that took place here.
The false flag that took place here and that we've gotten away with and rammed down your throats.
The very fact of how close we came to an election overturned.
Oh, wait, she actually didn't intend that to be funny or even ironic.
The very fact of how close we came to an election overturned. That reflects the fragility of democracy.
And that is precisely the truth, because that's exactly what the founders warned about. Although I doubt most of them thought it could possibly be this blatant. Which inclines me to include a couple more quotes from an actual honest statesman, and an American who would have fought to the death against exactly what's been accomplished here today. James Madison, first from the Ratification Convention in Virginia for the Constitution, said, "I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the rights of the people by the gradual and silent encroachments of those in power," maybe today he could add even those who have stolen power by rigging an election, "than by violent and sudden usurpations." And in another one of the Federalist Papers, Madison wrote, "A government resting on the minority, especially if they claim 81 million votes, vast numbers of which were obvious fakes, is an aristocracy, not a republic." And note, folks, they've quit even trying to claim that it is. "And could not be safe with a numerical and physical force against it." That's why we're seeing what we're seeing today, folks. They know they're not safe. The revolution has been a success so far, but more and more people are starting to wake up and to say no to committing suicide on other levels as well. So they're starting to double down and really sweat bullets at this point, pun intended. "Such an illegitimate government could not be safe," Madison continued, "without a standing army, an enslaved press, and a disarmed populace. So far, there are at least 2 out of 3. And in most of the communist states of America, they're 3 for 3. So this is what that doubling down sounds like.
"The resolve I saw in our elected leaders when I returned to the Senate chamber that night, their resolve not to yield, but to certify the election.
Come hell or high water.
That reflects its strength."
Not the strength of the rule of law, of course, that's dead, but the strength of our iron fist around the neck of a formerly free republic. Well, before we run out of time, even though it wouldn't be that big of a deal if we did, let's talk about the Biden-Führer's comments himself. Right off the teleprompter. So after the communist Chinese puppet took off his mask, he was actually able to read this.
"Madam Vice President, my fellow Americans, to state the obvious."
No, I don't think he was supposed to read that part.
"1 year ago today, in this sacred place, democracy was attacked, simply attacked."
And if you're not already sick of it, there's a theme you're going to hear until you are, because none of these people have a clue what form of government we were actually supposed to have. Just that whatever it was, it's now been overthrown.
"The will of the people was under assault. The Constitution, our Constitution, faced the gravest of threats. Outnumbered in the face of a brutal attack..."
Because we rejected Trump's request for the National Guard, remember? Oh, no, we're not allowed to say that. That's not on the teleprompter.
"The Capitol Police, the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, the National Guard, and other brave law enforcement officials saved the rule of law. Our democracy held. We, the people, endured. We, the people, prevailed."
That's not you, the people, of course. That's just we, those of us here in the deep state swamp. You don't get a vote. And if you thought you did, we just flipped it and counted a whole lot of others instead.
"For the first time in our history, a president had not just lost an election, he tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power
to those who had so successfully stolen it.
But they failed. They failed.
We got away with it, and now we're rubbing their noses in it. And we're poisoning them, whether they figured it out yet or not, and we're going to kill their kids, too."
"On this day of remembrance, we must make sure that such attack never, never happens again."
And we're sure as hell never going to have another honest election.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. I agree.
We'll wrap up with a couple of other stories that shouldn't be forgotten on this day. The first one, courtesy of Patty McMurray and 100% Fed Up, says that no less than 3 different men suspected of being federal agents in or around the Capitol during that January 6th false flag have been subpoenaed by the attorney, John Mosley, of imprisoned Oath Keeper Kelly Meigs. The defense wants to call Ray Epps, Stuart Rhodes, and Officer Harry Dunn, who Oath Keepers say helped protect the actually violent protesters. All of which, the defense says, will prove not only his client's innocence, but show that the so-called January 6th commission is politically motivated. And notably, continues the story, while Stuart Rhodes may have been the ringleader of the Oath Keepers, many of whom, like Meigs, have been arrested and held without bail for nearly a year, reporters, including Darren Beatty's Revolver News, have suggested that Rhodes was working with the FedGov or its various intelligence agencies in some capacity. But ironically, he's just about the only one who hasn't been charged by the FBI. And we'll close with this brief headline from another story at the Gateway Pundit about how the feds have finally admitted that, yes, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, was running so-called commandos at the January 6th protests who had been given shoot-to-kill orders. Of course, initially ridiculed as a conspiracy theory, the information is finally coming out, and the final tally, 4 Trump supporters died that day, including 2 women, shot or otherwise killed by Capitol Hill police. A third almost died, but was rescued by Green Beret Jeremy Brown. But the lies, folks, still far outpace the truth.